I am Plante on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The psychic medium John Edward joins me now. He's long been an international phenomenon with his countless appearances on television, and for many years was the host of his own syndicated television programs, Crossing Over and John Edward Cross Country. Over the next several weeks, he's crisscrossing the continent, making appearances in the United States and Canada, including here in Vancouver, Wednesday the 16th of September at the Marriott Pinnacle Hotel. The event begins at 7 p.m. Visit johnedward.net for tickets and information. On the website, you'll get his bio, which is rather extensive, and that's just a listing of all the television programs he's appeared on: Oprah, Dr. Phil, Larry King Live, The View, and many more. So what does Mr. Edward do? He's more than a psychic medium who can connect with those who have died. His lectures are known for their humor, down-to-earth advice, and counseling. I'll get him to tell us about what one might expect here in Vancouver, as well as his work, which takes him around the world. It's an interesting life, one that People magazine counted amongst one of its most intriguing. Some 10,000 people see Mr. Edward just in Canada alone whenever he tours. And on this leg of the tour, other than Vancouver, he'll be making appearances in Winnipeg, Regina, Saskatoon, Calgary, Edmonton, Toronto, St. John's, Halifax, Ottawa, and Montreal. Please welcome to the Plante Online program, John Edward. Mr. Edward, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So you were in, looking at your website and the schedule that you keep, you were in Las Vegas, Salt Lake City, Spokane, and Missoula just last week, and next week you'll be in Dallas just before coming up to Vancouver and going across Canada. The home for you is New York, is that right?
Yes, I'm currently at home right now in New York.
And so how much time do you spend at home?
You know, it depends. It's really funny. I made a decision that I was going to be home for the fall a lot more than I normally am, and it actually turned to be the exact opposite. I'm actually away from home a lot more than I've ever been. It's just a convergence of scheduling and things having to be rescheduled. So it's kind of one of those things where, what do they say? You want to make God laugh? Tell him your plan.
Yeah, man proposes, God disposes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine not many people knowing who you are and what you do. But when you do have to tell people what you do, what do you tell them?
If they don't know who I am and they don't know what I do, I tell them I'm a writer. That's the God's honest truth, because then I don't have to get into it.
Right.
But if they do know who I am, or they kind of know who I am, I'm a psychic medium, and I have the ability to connect with energy, and I talk about what's happening in a person's life, where they're coming from, and then their projection, and like what lessons they might be learning on that journey. And then the medium portion of my job is where I'm able to make connections with people who've crossed over. And I was very blessed to have the opportunity to host a show called Crossing Over about 15 years ago, and it was syndicated internationally. And then I did another show called Cross Country. I traveled across the country and then went back into the studio. So I've done two syndicated television shows where I teach people about, like, the other side, and I do readings, and that's kind of what my events are.
And so you can't tell us what the lottery numbers for next week will be or when we'll die, right?
No, that I can't tell you. But I can tell you this. When I was a kid, I was a teenager, and I was just developing and starting out, and I was doing this. My mom made a joke, and we were sitting at the dinner table, and it was the New York, New Jersey lottery that came up, and she said to me, "Come on, you're developing your psychic abilities. Pick the six numbers." And at the time, it was like you had to get five numbers and then the one like bonus number.
Right.
And I did it. Like, I literally did it live while it was happening. And my mom looked at me like I was in a complete state of shock. I got them out of order, but I got them. And I was like in a complete state of shock because like I was able to do it.
Yeah.
And I looked at her and I go, "Oh my God!" And she's like, "That was pretty funny." She goes, "You saw that already." And I go, "I did not." I go, it's the lottery. How could I have seen it?" I go, "It's not like I'm like, you know, I memorized the numbers because I knew you were going to ask me." It literally happened once in 30 years. I could never, ever do it again.
So is it a gift? You say you're developing, your mom told you that you were developing your psychic abilities, but so is one born with it and then, say, hones it and then it becomes their craft, their work as they get older, say, or...?
No, I think we all have this ability, and one of the things I've noticed that people, you know, in the genre over the years, where it's kind of been labeled as a gift or your psychic gift, and I kind of like to dispel that. I think that as soon as you use the word gift, it deems someone more special than somebody else. So I don't like to use the word gift. I think that intuition is normal and natural, like instinct is normal and have better instincts than others. Some people have stronger intuition than others. But I think that you can develop your intuition the same way that you can build your bicep. If you work at it, you can make it grow. You can get stronger. I think the important thing to recognize is like cooking. You could find recipes. You could cook for your family. You could become a very good cook at home. But it doesn't mean you should open a restaurant. So it means you can develop your ability to the point of being intuitive so that you can cook for yourself in your own life. You could pay attention to your own energy and make better informed decisions, understanding the energy of what you're supposed to be learning. But it doesn't mean you should do it for somebody else. So to answer your question, I think everybody has the intuitive ability. Everybody can make connections. And people can live a more evolved life doing so.
So, but you are better now than, say, you were 15, 30 years ago, right?
I think I'm better now than I was 5 years ago.
Yeah. And so what is that? Is that the experience of encountering people who seek your help, say, or what is that? Is it the meditation? Because I know you do that a lot.
I think it's the doing it. I think it's the, like, I'll give you an example. Are you into social media?
Yeah.
Okay, so I came into social media, like, not, I haven't been on the journey for a long time. So, I only embraced Twitter, like, a year and a half to 2 years ago. And I've just embraced Periscope. Mm-hmm. So Periscope is this new app that you can kind of like live broadcast. So I decided that, you know what, I'm going to do it. Let me see what happens. So I've done 6 live Periscopes. I just did one today. And I interact with people. Now, I can't see them. I can't hear them. But in every one of the Periscopes, I wind up tuning into one person and doing a reading for them and asking everybody else to kind of be quiet. And then it's me talking, so everybody can hear me. They're watching my process where I'm telling them what I'm seeing, hearing, and feeling and what it means to me. And then that one person that I'm reading is now then responding with yes or no's and explaining it. So for me, it's a way of honing my ability so that people can, and teaching simultaneously. And people can be like, you know, in the next 24 hours, it'll be up there. You can go to @psychicmediumje and watch what I'm talking about, where I answer people's questions and I kind of talk to them a little bit, talk a little bit about September 11th, and then I read for this woman and gave the information. So for me, I feel like that keeps me on my game, whereas, you know, I've watched other people, you know, do what they do, and over a period of time, they might get lazier with it because people know that they're good at doing it. I don't want to get lazy at what I do. I want to stay sharp and focused, and I want to keep challenging myself.
So then, is this ability that you have, can it also be a burden? Say you're in an airplane, or you're at Grand Central, say, and there's just millions of people around you. I mean, are you getting energies from all those people?
If I was open, I could.
So you can dial it down.
You have to.
Yeah.
You have to. You know, like metaphysics 101 is that if you work in the world of energy, you understand that there's a time and place for how you do it. So, for example, I use a lot of healthcare analogies. If I'm a surgeon, I don't operate in the supermarket. I don't operate at Grand Central. I don't operate at the airport.
Uh-huh.
There's a time and place for that. It's scheduled. It's something that you allocate your energy for. You prepare for it. You gown up and mask and you scrub in to make sure that it's a positive, healthy experience for all people connected. And then when you're done, you scrub out, and then you hope that the job you did leaves the people better than you found them. So, but when I'm in the airport, I'm still the surgeon, I'm still the medium, I'm still the psychic, I'm just not doing active reading.
Now, when you make appearances, I'm assuming that the people that come to see you, like they will in Vancouver next week, are fans of yours, are seeking help, but, I mean, do skeptics show up as well?
You know, it's funny you should say that. There's a couple of cities that every now and again, and Vancouver is one of them, I seem to bring out, like, the Skeptic Society, so I give them a platform, so... You know, come one, come all, bring your signs, bring out your, you know, whatever it is that you need. If I can provide people with an opportunity to be skeptical, I'm all for that. The difference is that I'm a skeptic. You know, somebody at my events last year said to me, Mr. Edwards, can I make a statement instead of ask you a question? I go, sure. She goes, you sound like you belong more to the Skeptic Society the way you speak than you do, like, the psychic community. And I literally burst out hysterical laughing because I really, really am someone who is very, very logical and very, very analytical, and I look at things factually. I, you know, lent my abilities and my time to the University of Arizona on 4 separate occasions to be tested by their human energy systems laboratory, and it was, you know, that was all documented in double-blind studies and stuff and written about in the book. And, like, I really feel like it's important to be as logical with something that's as amorphous as this is. But I still remain skeptical. Now, when people call themselves skeptics and they attack the subject matter, they are not skeptics. They are calling themselves skeptics. But what they truly are cynics. And here's the difference. Somebody who's skeptical is basically looking for information to inform them differently. Some type of analysis or some type of proof that will help to shift their lack of understanding or belief in a subject matter. Period, end of statement. But a cynic, no matter what they experience, see, hear, feel, no matter what it is, they're not shifting. And that's truly what people who are, quote-unquote, the skeptics are. They're really cynics. They're not skeptics.
It's sort of like the agnostic versus the atheist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. The atheists, you know, which, and they correct me up, you know, because they're like, you know, I have no belief system. I'm like, yes, you do. You're an atheist. Your belief system is not to have one.
Yeah. So when you are in contact with those that have crossed over, with the dead, the energies that you receive from them, what form do they take? I mean, are they voices? Are they visions? What are they?
It's energy. So, like, right now, you're imagining, you know, like, I'm in New York, and you're listening to me, and you can hear me, and then you can get a feeling of my personality by the way I'm talking. So now take those three things and make it completely energetic in your mind. So thoughts and daydreams are how images will come to me, like, you know, glimpses and pictures. I'm hearing things in my mind, but they're thoughts. They're not out loud communications like you and I are having. And the feelings I have are just that, they're feelings. So I describe what I'm feeling, I tell you what I'm thinking, and I tell you what I'm saying. And it's like a shorthand, it's like a psychic shorthand, but I interpret it in my frame of reference because they're basically playing a game of, like, psychic charades, trying to figure out how to get me to say certain things, how to convey a certain concept. And then I have to kind of pass that on to the person that I'm talking to.
So you are in connection with the soul, not, say, a ghost, for example.
No, I'm in connection with an energy, and I think, you know, it's so funny. Somebody just on Twitter, right before I called you,
yeah,
said something about, you know, they don't like ghost hunting shows because they think that it's fake. And I'm like, listen, you know, I don't know if they're real or fake, but I don't like shows that are hunting ghosts. I don't think ghosts need to be hunted. You know, I don't think it's the terminology and the spooky association that goes with the subject matter. So I look at it as energy. We're all energy. Whether we're energy in a physical body or energy out of the physical body, we're still energy.
So when we die and they say rest in peace, we don't actually do that?
You know, I think the rest in peace, that is the religious kind of phrase. And it's a conceptual concept to get people to imagine what happens now that the physical body has ceased,
mm-hmm,
and that we don't see the physical animation happening anymore. So we say that they're in heaven, they're in the afterlife, the hereafter, the spirit world, whatever you want to call it. And it's our way of explaining what we don't understand. So we just basically say, rest in peace. Well, what if the other side is not rest in peace? What if it's soul evolution and working on helping our loved ones and friends who are still here navigate this classroom of life? What if it's helping our children that we leave behind make good decisions as opposed to bad relationship decisions? What if somebody who struggled in life with addiction is now helping somebody in a completely different country as a guide, helping them make better choices not to be an addict or say, don't go to the bar, go home instead, go to the meeting, don't go to the bar. So I think, you know, rest in peace is a conceptual analogy to help people deal with grief or to deal with what we don't know.
So if there are people that are cruel, who are mean, who are evil, and you know, so some people describe them as soulless. Do they really not have a soul? And do those sorts of people, can you feel their energy, say?
You know, I believe everybody has a soul, and I think everybody has free will. And when someone makes choices that are evil, despicable, violent, when they cross over, they have to tone for that. I think they have to sit in judgment of themselves and those choices. They have to on the other side what it is that they did to other people. I don't think they escape that. So I think that there, I've always said this, that the universal karmic judicial system is way more intense than any type of judicial system on the planet.
And so when people come to you and seek a reading, I mean, I've seen you on television a number of times, the people that say I could be in contact with, they would have to be people that I would have known or met? I mean, could I meet, say, relatives from hundreds of years ago or Nixon or Frank Sinatra, say?
unless you're related to Nixon or Frank Sinatra, I'm thinking that I'm coming through.
No,
but
okay.
You know, if you have a link, if there's a link, like I've had people who have come for a private session and I wind up connecting with a coworker's parent, they didn't know, but because they're connected to the coworker, the parent can come through. I've had people come through that are, if they know their family generationally, they can come through. But there's got to be a link, so you're not going to have. It's not like, oh, we're going to, you know, tonight we're dialing up Elvis.
Yeah. And have you ever had the encounter with, say, someone who tells someone living that they've died? Like, they didn't know that someone they know had died, and you're the conduit, say, for that information.
Okay, so I'm doing a reading for somebody, and I tell them that somebody's passed, and they didn't know?
Yeah.
Yes, I have.
Huh.
And actually, that story is funny. You're being very psychic. That story is an important and impactful story for me because I was doing, I had a certain reading style, like that if somebody said no to me, I would say, okay, well, write it down. You know, just remember this. Okay, write it down in case it comes up. It was like that kind of, not very, it was more like I would kind of bow down to the person I was reading and I wouldn't really enforce it. And I did a reading for a woman who I thought her husband had passed, and I kept saying, your husband's here, and described how he passed. I got his name, I got all this information. She said, you're right about everything except he's alive. And she said, and that, you know, bastard should be passed, blah, blah, blah. He's my ex-husband, blah, blah, blah. She made a joke out of it. But I have two grown children with him, and if he had passed, we would know. So move on. And she was very, very intense. She was very, very New Yorker intense. Intimidating is the word. And as intense as she was actually very honest. And 2 weeks after the reading, she sent me a letter in the mail. She found out in my office that her ex-husband indeed had passed. So he came through to her for his kids during that reading. And she basically apologized to me. And I remember standing in my kitchen looking at the letter, and I felt horrible. And the reason why I felt horrible is that I didn't have the tenacity to stick to the information. And I let her kind of like, not bully me, but kind of let, you know, kind of push me aside. And, and I made a decision in that moment. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to care how I look. I'm not going to care what I sound like. I don't care if I'm on live radio or live television. I'm sticking with the information. Like, I'm just sticking with it. And that's been my policy ever since. Like, and that was the reason why, because I literally felt like I failed that man. And then I remember thinking, like, wow, how many people have I, like, totally screwed up their readings because I didn't have, you know, the courage to be able to say, no, this is it. Like, no, this is the... So it was a big turning point for me.
Yeah,
very,
so,
very big turning point.
Well, what's it like for you then to go home at night? I mean, and I've, you know, as I said, I've seen you on TV. I mean, these people are very emotional once they've talked to you. I mean, how do you not, you know, have that affect you?
Well, you know what? I know, you know, I used to be a phlebotomist. I used to be the person that, like, stuck people with needles all day and drew your blood in the hospital. And people would say to me the same thing, like, oh, my God, like, how does it feel to know nobody wants to see you? How does it feel to know that nobody wants to see you walk into the room or that they have to come see you? And I my answer then is the same thing. It's like, I knew that I was doing them a positive service. I knew that if they got me to draw their blood, I knew I was going to be less painful than some of the other people that they were going to have draw their blood. Like, I was very precise, I was very methodical, and I was able to, like, intuitively know where their veins were. I was in, I was out, I was good. And people would always say, oh, my God, thank you, that was amazing, that was so good. So in the same vein, pardon the pun, I feel like I have the ability, and by the way, I've never made that joke before, just so you know. I feel the same way. It's like, you know what, it's very intense, and it's very hard to do a reading for someone because they're dealing with loss and grief. But I feel very empowered, and I feel good knowing that my intentions are to help them and to leave them better than I find them and to try to get them to be inspired in their life somewhere.
So when people look you up online, they'll get to your website, of course, and they'll see all the work that you've done. They'll see clips of all of your various appearances. But then just as much as that, you'll get criticism that's been leveled at you over the years. At the end of the day, what do you say to the critics who say that you're taking advantage of the grieving, the James Randis of the world, who say that you're a charlatan or a fraud?
I don't say anything, to be honest. They're part of that whole cynic thing that I talked about, because I don't really feel like they're explorers of mind. They're people who are just, you know, out to debunk. You know, if your job is a debunker, it's no different than if you're going to buy a property and you say to the person, before you go to buy a property, you want to have somebody come look at it. If you hire somebody to do a house inspection and you pay them $500, because that's usually what it costs, you pay them $500 to come in and to give you, like, what's wrong with the house, they're not going to come out without a tremendously thick report of everything that's wrong with that house. And if you ever look at a house inspection, some of the stuff is absolutely ridiculous. It's, like, absolutely ridiculous. Instead of just going, like, look, you know, 90% of the house is good, but you might want to replace the roof, you might want to look at the hot water heater, you might want to look at this, you might want to look at that. It's this very comprehensive report, because that's what their job is to give you what's wrong with the house. So somebody who's a debunker, their job is to debunk. It's the moment that they give any credibility to anything else, they're out of a job. They have no job. They're now unemployed. So it's like you take away their motion. So for me, you know, I say this all the time, like, I didn't have to go put my reputation and name on the line to be studied at a university. I don't have to go on Periscope for free and try to help answer people's questions. And, like, I don't need clients for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I don't need clients. I have enough people on a list that for the rest of my life, that if I wanted to read every single day, I could. But that's not my goal. My goal is to help and to teach. So I'll use a Periscope or Twitter or Facebook or whatever I can. All of that's free. That's my time to help inspire people and to, you know, leave them better than I find them. But to go back to your question, I don't say anything to them. The people that I say stuff to would be my son and my daughter. My son's 13 and my daughter's 8.5. So when you have to sit down, you know, and explain to them, don't Google daddy's name because of those same very things, you know, and explain to them that there are people who have a belief system that daddy is, you know, a negative person, and that they think that I'm doing this, and they think that daddy's work represents this, and they think that my goal and motivation is this. When you have to have that conversation with a 13-year-old as opposed to stay off porn sites, mm-hmm. that's pretty crappy. You know, it's like, I'd much rather be like, stay off porn sites. But yeah, that kind of negative is the only issue. And without my kids, there is no negative for me. There is, without, you know, and once they get past a certain age, I won't care.
So what do they make of what their father does?
It's normal. Yeah. In the same way that I want my audiences and the people that watch me to know that it's normal, they recognize that it's normal, that these are just tools for life, and that it's a belief system, that it's an understanding and a philosophy. And, you know, it's interesting when you raise people to be explorers and discoverers in their thinking, when you have a 13-year-old and an 8-year-old ask you questions that are sometimes better than what the skeptics can ask you, it's pretty cool, but it leads to good dialogue.
At the end of the day, to use a trite phrase, I mean, is death something that we should be afraid of, and is it something that we can be prepared for?
It is, but you know what? I think people, there's something that people, they fear death, and they fear the concept of death to the point that it paralyzes them about life. So I always said that Crossing Over wasn't a show about dead people. Crossing Over was a show about living people and how they cope. And I think that's what I want people to recognize. If people listening to this right now, you know, if they never find me on Twitter or Facebook, if they don't watch Periscope, if they don't come see me, that's cool. But live a better life. Tell the people that are in your life now how you feel about them. Because one day they're not going to be here, or you're not going to be here. So how great to, like, make sure that every single day you're having conversations with people that are inspired, that the conversations you have with them, that if you, you know, one of the things I say to my kids is, hey, in case they get abducted by aliens, I want you to know this. And, you know, they giggle and they laugh. But the reality is, what I'm saying is, one day I might not be here, and I want you to know this. So feel free to steal my phrase. Tell people, in case they get abducted by aliens, I want you to know this. And then tell them what you know how you feel about them.
Now, as I said in the introduction, you're traveling across Canada and throughout North America, and then later this year you're going abroad. Do you find audiences different in certain places? I mean, you mentioned the woman that you read in New York, very intense, as opposed to, say, well, I mean, what are the people in Vancouver like that you encounter?
You know what? I love coming to Canada, and it's like the friendliest bunch of people on the planet, and it's friendly is the word. That is... As soon as I get through customs, once we're past customs, once I'm past customs, it's like the friendliest country on the planet. You know, but you got to get past customs first.
Yeah, so the customs, it affects everybody, doesn't it?
Yeah, like I think Donald Trump would love Canadian customs in the United States. Like I think he'd like, you know, Canadian customs. Sometimes I feel like, oh my God, do you guys not want me to come here? Like, should I not come here? Like,
well, he says he won't build a wall on this side of the border, so I think we're safe. Yeah.
I think he's probably traveled to Canada and realized he doesn't need it.
Yeah, exactly. John, it's been fascinating talking to you today. Safe travels on your tour.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
The website for more, johnedward.net. The Twitter handle is @psychicmediumje. The event in Vancouver is Wednesday, the 16th of September at 7 p.m. at the Marriott Pinnacle Hotel, 1128 West Hastings. John Edward joined me on the line from New York and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.